Rick Porcello, May 10th, 2017.
You could just start by saying a little bit about your Italian background, your family heritage.
Both my parents are Italian. We grew up kind of practicing a lot of the, traditional Italian, I guess, cultural habits that you practice in the United States. We cook fish and, Christmas Eve, so fishes and all that sort of stuff. And my mother's got a ton of recipes from her grandmother. And, she was always cooking meals, pretty much every night she was making dinner. And then on the weekends she'd make, big time meals. And that was the part of New Jersey that I was from. That was kind of traditional for Italian families to do on Sundays. And, we definitely practice that. We're just, we're proud of our Italian heritage, and then from an area of the country where there are a lot of Italian Americans. So, I don't know. I just kind of grew up around it. So it was never, it's funny now playing baseball, and not a lot of guys in other parts of the country are really around a lot of Italians. So it's funny to see their reaction with some of the stuff.
Do you know where your family came from in Italy?
Yeah, my dad's family is from Avellino, and
Really?
yeah,
My dad's family is from
yeah,
province.
and my mother's family is in like two towns over, which I don't know the name of the town that they're from. So,
Still in the province of Avellino, too.
yeah,
On both sides, then, his mother and
yeah.
Did you know your grandfather well, Sam Denton?
I did not. I didn't have really a strong relationship with either one of my grandfathers. Really, the only grandparent that I had spent any kind of time around as a child was my grandmother on my father's side. So, didn't get an opportunity to really, kind of share, I guess, your childhood with them. But, so.
Did she speak Italian when you were around?
My great grandparents did. So they came over from Italy and they spoke fluent Italian. And then my grandparents, kind of, they could understand it and speak it a little bit. And then I guess, my parents, they don't really speak it. My mother knows a little bit, but that's kind of more just because she's smart and well read, but yeah, I wish I knew Italian. I don't know why in high school I was taking Spanish classes all these years. I should have been
saying you were in New Jersey.
yeah.
They must teach Italian in
Yeah.
Jersey.
Oh yeah, I know. I don't know why I took Spanish, but I did.
Anyway. Well, talk to me a little bit about how you got started in baseball, how old you were.
Yeah, I was, I guess, 5, 6 years old, whatever that age is, when you start playing T-ball. And I, started out like every other kid, I guess. I had an older brother and a younger brother. We all played, baseball, basketball, football when we were kids growing up. And we're just, that was the kind of family we were in. We're in a sports family. We all love baseball, especially because of, the lineage that we had, and it was kind of in our blood a little bit with my grandfather playing. And yeah, it just kind of grew from there. My parents were great parents and extremely supportive of all the things that myself and my brothers wanted to do, but especially athletics. And they made all that possible for us as children. And it's really the only reason why I'm able to live out my dream today is because of their sacrifices, taking me to practices, games, all sorts of stuff. So, that's, I got them to thank for everything, really, and having the opportunity I have today to play in the big leagues.
So I assume you played high school ball, Legion ball,
Yeah, played
Catholic
high school.
school.
Yeah, played on some travel teams. Honestly, I was playing as much baseball as I could possibly play. I pitched obviously, and played shortstop, and it really didn't matter what position I was playing. I just loved playing. So yeah, I played Legion, played for my high school team, Seton Hall Prep, and then I guess my junior and senior year did some more kind of travel stuff and had made some trips along the East Coast and played a couple tournaments in Florida and North Carolina and stuff. But yeah, for the most part, just a lot of baseball and playing in the New Jersey tri-state area.
Yeah. What was your favorite team?
My high school team. My senior year, our high school team was just a blast. I mean, it was kind of a, for high school seniors, kind of a dream, dream come true. Won the state championship. We were ranked, number one nationally. I mean, it was just an awesome season for us. And, that was definitely my favorite childhood or team I played on when I was, younger.
What about major league team? Who did you root for?
I was a Mets fan. I don't know how or why, but, I guess right around 2000 was when I kind of really started paying attention. I was around 12, 13 years old, and they made that run to the World Series, and I had been cheering for them years prior to that, but that was kind of what solidified me as a Mets fan, and, so struggled through that.
Yeah. When did you start thinking that you might do this as a profession?
Yeah, I never thought that it would be my decision. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I always kind of was just, I'm going to play. I'm going to love playing. I'm going to work hard at it and see where it takes me. And that's really as far as I let myself go when I was kid and even now. Obviously, I always had dreams of playing at the major league level, but you can't deny the fact that it's really hard to get here, and statistically it's pretty rare for kids anywhere to make it to this level and then be here. So I guess I was always realistic with myself and understanding that you might be good at the sport, but it takes more than just being good to make it to this level. And, you never know what's going to happen and where life's going to take you. So I just enjoyed playing, and that kind of allowed me to be really passionate about it, and it gave me the will to work harder at it and put a lot of focus into it. I think if I put pressure on myself to get a college scholarship or make it to the big league level as a kid, I might have maybe burned out playing or whatever whatever happens during those years, you just get sick of training for it. And that never really happened for me. I loved everything about it.
When did the scout start falling into,
Yeah, in high school, I guess, when I was 16, 15, 16, 17 years old, I kind of see a couple scouts here and there. And then obviously my junior and senior year were when a lot of them started showing up and, pretty much every game I pitched, they were at. So,
but you must have been exceptional because you played double-A ball 1 year. The next year, you're 20 years old and you're starting rotation for the Detroit Tigers. I mean, talk about that.
Well, I actually never even played in double-A. I played full season in high-A, single-A, in the Florida State League. And then I think it was just a culmination of, I was fortunate to be in the right spot at the right time. There was an opening in the rotation that spring training. Some of the other guys that were lined up for that spot were battling different things and not performing. And, I was lucky enough to have a manager in Jim Leland that was willing to take risks and willing to stick his neck out for a 20-year-old kid and give him the opportunity to play at the big league level. And that was just, I just happened to be in that situation. And I think if I was in any other organization, they wouldn't even consider that a possibility for a 20-year-old kid coming out of high school to make the big league team. It's one of those things where even if you look ready, you usually get sent down for a little bit more seasoning and just, it's important to build that foundation at the minor league level, but I got lucky and was able to start my big league career off at a young age and start learning quickly.
But Jim Leland was an old school kind of crusty manager. I mean, he was not one I wouldn't think to say, "Oh, let's give this a chance." He must have seen something in you that.
Well, he did, and you know, I performed well that spring that I made the big league club when I was 20. And the one thing that he said to myself and the entire team that I'll never forget was that, you know, at the end of spring training, when he looks at 25 guys in the room, when he looks into their eyes, he wants them to know that he took the best 25 guys and that there wasn't, you know, any contractual or political things going on, that he was putting the best club out there. And you know, I loved that and I respected that so much. And that was really, that was why I was able to make the team, is that was the philosophy that he went by, and he felt that I was one of the best 25 guys. So,
yeah, obviously. So did it dawn on you at some point, maybe even in your first game, that here you are 20 years old, you're playing with and against the greatest ball players in the world? I mean, how did that feel?
It dawned on me. I can't say I was able to really process all of that at age 20. I didn't, you know, I definitely had wide eyes and was doing the best I could to take everything in, but, yeah, I was still 20 years old. I didn't realize, you know, all the thing, and I had made it there very quickly to the big leagues. So, you know, I didn't take the hard, long road that a lot of other guys had taken. And I'm not going to say I took it for granted. I was very, very grateful for the opportunity. But at the same time, when, you know, you're not experiencing anything else and you find yourself in the big leagues, it's kind of, you know, it's hard to really to understand the magnitude of all of it at, you know, at that sport. So, I mean, I don't know. I just kind of just was playing, and that was it. I was just watching the veteran guys and learning how they did things and trying to establish myself, and didn't really let anything else kind of come into my head, which is a good thing and a bad thing, because, you know, sometimes you have blinders on and you can kind of lose sight of some of the things that, you know, made you good and why you got to that spot in the first place. So it's a great spot and it's a great opportunity to be in as a 20-year-old, but it also presents some challenges that you got to be ready to handle.
Well, do you remember your first game?
First pitch, I remember the first hit, first home run, first strikeout. What stands out to me was getting a couple of outs and realizing that this is the same game that I've been playing my whole life. And then in that same game, realizing that it's the same game with the best players in the world, because I had a really good ball game going, and then I gave up. I threw a curveball to Adam Landy, swung and missed, and I thought, okay, well, I'm just going to throw him another one. And I threw another one, and I threw it about 4 or 5 inches higher than I threw the first curveball, and he hit it out to dead center for a two-run homer, and I was out of the game. And I went from having a five-plus inning outing with one run to five-plus innings and four runs, and it was, you know, it was just it was kind of all those things that you're wondering before you get to perform in that type of a spot. They all came out in one game.
Was that like a dose of reality? Did it make you wonder then?
Yeah, it was a dose. It was a dose of reality in both aspects. It was a reality check that I am good enough, that my stuff plays at this level, because I was able to get through five innings with, you know, pretty solid, you know, pitching. And then also understanding that, you know, the more those hitters see you and the more your stuff's exposed to them, the tougher it is. And you know, mistakes are very fine lines at this level. And it went from being a great outing to, you know, an outing that we lost the game. And it was just, you know, you're in control of everything 1 second, and then the next second it's, yeah, you get knocked back down. So,
well, everybody that plays at this level is going to face some real adversity. Do you remember what that was for you when you really struggling at some point?
Yeah, I really started to struggle bad my second year in 2010. You know, I just didn't have a complete repertoire. I was a sinker. I had developed a really good sinker in the minor leagues, and I had a good changeup, but didn't have much of a breaking ball, and really didn't have a whole lot of feel for pitching. You know, I knew how to throw strikes. I knew the simple objectives, but as far as controlling a game and managing a game and you know, all the things that make good starting pitchers at this level, I had no idea. And, you know, that all kind of came caught up with me my second year. Got sent down to AAA for a month. Started to revamp some things. And really, you know, the first 4 years of my career were, I would say, I don't want to say rocky, but definitely was difficult after having a lot of success my rookie year. The next 3 years, I was, you know, started to try and search on who I was as a pitcher again and kind of lost my way a little bit and trying to figure out, you know, how am I going to be successful at this level for an extended period of time, because what I was doing was only working for short periods of time. One time through a lineup or, you know, after one full season, all of a sudden now the league's caught up to me and all the things that were working the first year are not working. Guys are on top of it now. You know, I just went through that whole process that guys go through at the minor league level and polishing their pitches and kind of their mental game. I was going through at the big league level, and you know, I don't know if it took me longer at the big league level than maybe it would have taken me at the minor league level, but it certainly was difficult because you have the pressure of, you know, I was on a winning team and we're trying to make the playoffs and win World Series, but I'm also trying to figure out how the hell to get guys out on a consistent basis. So, you know, it was good though. I think it really gave me a strong head as far as how to handle, you know, some of those struggles and the adversity that, you know, you face on the field at the major league level.
All the adjustments that everybody has to make.
Yeah, exactly. And you're never a finished product. And, you know, I didn't realize that I was working towards something that I'm always going to be working towards instead of, you know, I was under the mindset that I'm going to work towards something and I'm going to be this guy forever. And it's not like that. You gotta find yourself every day at this level. And it doesn't carry over from day to day. You got to put the time in and, you know, that was something, you know, I just learned through experience and realizing what it took to be a consistent performer.
So you were 6 years in Detroit, and you came to the Sox.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that transition a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I had finally in Detroit my last couple of years started to get back on track and was making some really good progress and developing, headed in the right direction. Felt really good about what I was doing. And you know, I leaned on the pitching coach in Detroit, Jeff Jones, a lot throughout those couple of years that I was kind of developing and you know, he helped me to stay on track when maybe mechanically or mentally I'd kind of waver a little bit or start to drift. And I got to Boston and all the things that I had started to get under control and do well in Detroit, I kind of, you know, I lost the feel for that, and you know, it resulted in a really, really difficult first season for me in Boston. And again, you know, got knocked back down, kind of almost went through the same thing I went through my first couple of years and got back into, like, this identity crisis a little bit because my sinker wasn't sinking as well as it had been in Detroit. I was throwing more four-seamers, and the four-seamer was a good pitch, but I didn't really know how to use it, and that was something that I was just introducing kind of into my game plans. You know, it just, I got off track and had to fight hard to get back on track and kind of re-identify myself and reestablish, you know, how I was going to pitch and how I was going to attack hitters and what weapons I was going to use at what times and, you know, manage games like a good major league pitcher does. And, you know, went through those struggles in 2015 in Boston, put a lot of pressure on myself too, which, you know, didn't help. Ended up going on the DL for the first time in my career, and then, you know, whatever happened when I was on the DL, it wasn't anything in particular. I just kind of kind of settled down and just had this big sigh of, like, all right, stop putting pressure on yourself and just play the game and enjoy playing the game and enjoy the whole process of, you know, what I got to go through to get back to where I want to get back to and being successful. And, you know, as I came back from the DL, I started throwing the ball like myself again, and it was kind of just, you know, took off from there. So,
is that how you would explain what happened last year?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, it really started that first year when I came back from the DL. You know, I think just having a little bit of a clearer mind and, you know, getting back to just basic strike one, working down in the zone, timely elevated pitches, mixing my breaking balls in, you know, all that stuff that sounds really simple when you talk about it now, but when you're on the mound and the game's going 1,000 miles an hour, you lose sight of it very quickly, especially when you're in a new environment. So, you know, getting back to all that, I just kind of came in with that mindset into last year into spring training, was just, you know, work on my fastball command. That's what's going to get me through ball games. That's what's going to get me through the season. So I worked hard on executing my sinkers down in the zone and my four-seamer up in the zone. And really, I got my ass kicked in spring training in last year. I didn't have very good results, but I stuck with the plan and didn't jump ship on it. And it ended up paying dividends for me and just built momentum as the season went on and, you know, was able to put up the numbers that I did.
So, I mean, it was a remarkable season, one of the best in Red Sox history, really, 22-4. I mean, as the season went along, did you get more confident, or were you wondering, can this continue?
No, I got more confident. I started to, you know, I was making adjustments very quickly in games, from pitch to pitch, basically. I was able to identify, you know, what I was doing wrong and then get right back on track and execute the next pitch. You know, the ability to do that allowed me to slow everything down, and that was the key. Just the game was moving at a much slower pace for me. Although I was still working quickly, you know, I could just, it was just clear in my head on what I wanted to do to hitters, how I was going to do it. And, you know, I just was able to get into a zone where I could focus on that, and, you know, it ended up getting better as the season went on. And, you know, I can't really explain it other than I just got in that groove and I was able to maintain it.
Boston baseball, I should have said earlier, I'm a lifelong Sox fan of a Massachusetts mega. Boston baseball is different from any place else. You know that.
I mean, yeah.
There's a lot of pressure, especially when you come with a different team.
Yeah.
Did you feel comfortable from the get-go, or, I don't know, the first year?
Yeah, no.
I mean, just with the Boston atmosphere, the media, the fans.
Yeah, I felt comfortable performing in that type of an environment. What I wasn't comfortable with was the pressure that I was putting on myself. And, you know, I don't know really what comes first there, but I do know that, you know, all of us as humans, we kind of have the final say on what we're going to make our own expectations and how we're going to, you know, see things. And I was, you know, demanding a lot of myself, and it became toxic. It was something that I couldn't perform with, because I was just suffocating myself with every bad pitch I threw, every bad inning I had, it was just all kind of snowballing on me. And, yeah, I wasn't able to shake that stuff off because I was in a new place and I wanted to put my best foot forward, and I wanted to come in here and you know, show everybody else I was going to be, you know, a quality pitcher for this organization and help us win. And, you know, I just didn't go about it the right way.
Well, you're not the first player to come to Boston. It's running this club, yeah. You know, it's a high-pressure situation, but I mean, the way you turned it around last year was just phenomenal. I get this is a stupid question, but is that your biggest thrill so far, or something else that stand out even more?
I think it's probably have a couple, I guess, in my big league career. You know, first was being told by Jim Leland that I made the big league team at age 20. I mean, that was one of my biggest thrills and the start of my journey at this level. Our ball club making it to World Series in 2012 was another huge thrill for me. And then, you know, last year winning the Cy Young and being able to share that with my family and my teammates and bringing that trophy back to this organization was, you know, just about my biggest accomplishment at this level. So, you know, I'd probably go with that one for sure. You know, although I see a couple of them as special moments for me that, you know, I don't know how to order them.
You want to talk about a little bit about your passion for fly fishing?
Sure, yeah. I just, you know, I don't kind of, when I was a kid, my mother got myself and my brothers a couple fly rods for Christmas, and during the summertime when we were out of school, she dropped my younger brother and I off at, there's like a little pond in the middle of our town, and we'd go over there and we'd, you know, fly fish for bass and bluegill, and just kind of started like that. My dad used to take us over to, they stocked trout in this one local stream by our house in New Jersey, and we'd go over there and catch trout, and it just kind of grew from there and turned into something that, you know, we always found ourselves on Saturday or Sunday asking our dad if he could take us fishing, and kind of became that thing for our family, and, you know, just grew from there, and now it's like, you know, I'd say fly fishing and golf are my two biggest hobbies, and I'd take fly fishing any day. I love doing it.
Well, you started out fly fishing. I mean, usually people, it's a rest of
it. Yeah, I did both. You know, if I wasn't, I was stubborn. If I wasn't catching anything with the fly rod, I'd go back to the spinning rod. Okay. Trying.
That makes me feel better.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess now it's, I'm pretty much, that's all I do is fly fish. So,
haven't you compared fly fishing to pitching in some way?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of things that you can compare. You know, there's a little bit of a chess match that goes on as far as, you know, you're trying to match a hatch and fly fishing, and in baseball you're finding that right pitch selection and that right sequence of pitches that's gonna, you know, hopefully induce weak contact or get the hitter to get himself out or whatever it is. But, you know, you never really know what the answer is until you do it. And then I think the patience and kind of that relaxed intensity that at least I need to have when I'm on the mound to perform well is similar to fly fishing. You know, obviously I'm not as intense when I'm on a river, but, you know, you still got to be focused and see what's going on around you. And you got to be patient with it because fish don't come on every cast. And right. Sometimes results on the mound don't come with every pitch. But you got to be patient with it and trust what you're doing. And, you know, we've all, anybody who's thrown a pitch has thrown pitches that they thought were pretty good. And they've, you know, given up bloopers or even hard hits. And you still got to have trust that that's the right pitch and be patient with the results that are coming your way.
Have you ever read Ted Williams' book on fishing?
I haven't read his.
You know, Ted Williams is a fisherman.
Only guy to be in three Hall of Fames.
Yeah. Have you ever fished in Massachusetts and Western?
Yeah, I fished Deerfield all the time, actually. We have, my family has a lake house about, it's very close to Deerfield, so we fish it. Yeah, we fish Fife Brook all the way down. I mean, we fished it basically from the where it feeds off the back of Mount Snow and Haystack all the way down to where it feeds into the Connecticut. I mean, we fish pretty much the entire system.
That's where I grew up.
Yeah, so we, I mean, our place is probably half an hour, 45 minutes. I guess it would be north. West of Greenfield,
mm-hmm.
Half an hour west of Brattleboro.
Okay.
So yeah, we're in South Vermont. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, beautiful.
Close to Mount Snow.
That's the one thing I miss about New England is the autumn.
Yeah, oh, that's my favorite time. Yeah, my family got me for winning the Cy Young, they got me a bamboo fly rod for as like a gift, and I can't wait for the fall to go fish for brookies and stuff. Go try it out. Yeah.
So after 8 years of pitching in the major leagues, what's left to learn for you?
Everything. There's you never learn it all in this game. There's always, because it's always evolving. It's what's great about it. I mean, I hear people talking about it a lot right now about how hitters are changing their swings. And guys are hitting with more of an uppercut and they're hitting a low ball better. So, I went from being my first 5, 6 years of my career being this pitcher that was just my only focus was to pound the bottom of the strike zone. Now that's getting hit a lot more now. So now there's an adjustment to make and combating that and finding other holes in their swings. So it's, you never learn it all, and you never have every answer, but the quicker you can make the adjustments, and really, I think more importantly, the quicker you can be aware of what's going on around you and make those adjustments. When the game's moving too fast for you don't see anything. You're all caught up in yourself. But when you're under control and you can step back, take a deep breath in between every pitch and see what's going on, see, that guy just, he was late on your fastball. He was beat by it. So, that's probably a good option to go with. Find a good spot to throw that fastball, because you throw an off-speed pitch, it'll probably be right on time. I mean, those things, when you're under control, you see those sort of stuff. And then when you're not, you're kind of just out there throwing blindly.
Do you see the general trends in how hitters are changing? I mean, I seem to see more guys hitting low balls out of the ballpark, and especially with a pander.
Yeah, I do. I think, just there's a lot of guys with the ability to hit the ball out of the ballpark to all parts now. Guys can hit the ball out to a left-handed hitter can hit the ball out to left center. You can hit the ball out to right center. So, you don't see as many left-handed hitters coming up that are just dead pull happy. Where, when a hitter's only trying to hit the ball to one side of the field, it creates holes that are, I don't want to say easily exploitable, but they're there. They're obvious to you that they're there. And if you execute the pitches in those general zones, you're gonna be successful. And a lot of times with a dead pull left-handed hitter, for me that would be a sinker down and away. Well, that can still work, but you might have to go about it a little bit differently. You might have to show up some off-speed stuff. You might have to elevate the ball first and then go down there, change his eye level. Because guys are really good in today's game at keying up the pitches down and hitting the ball hard to all parts of the field. So, it doesn't leave a lot of holes down at the bottom of the zone. But, hitting's really hard. And as a pitcher, you've got to understand that if they're covering down there, they can't cover up here, and vice versa. And there's going to be, they can establish with their swing and what they're going to try and do, where what part of the plate or what part of the strike zone they're going to cover, and I'm going to establish what part of the strike zone I'm going to cover. The beautiful part about being a pitcher is you're the one who's throwing the ball, so you have a say in what's going on there.
Well, you've pitched, except for interleague play, you pitched exclusively in the American League. Have there been certain hitters that have been tougher for you than others?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, it's kind of changed as my career's gone on, and some guys that I've had little success against in the past, I'm starting to find some more success against now, and then, vice versa. And I think that's just a result of some of the adjustments that I've made with
Sure.
how I'm throwing the ball and how I'm attacking guys. And guys, you pitch a couple of years in this league, guys start to get 30, 40, 50, 60 at bats off you, and there's no secrets at that point. It's just literally about executing the pitches and exploiting those holes. And that makes it challenging, because when you do make those mistakes, they're all over it. Because they know, they've seen you before. They know where you miss. They
At
know
this level.
your tendencies. So,
Want to name anybody in particular?
Yeah. There's actually a lot of guys that have really good numbers. I think Ellsbury was a guy that I really struggled against in my first 5-6 years of my career, finding a little bit more success against him lately, but he was a really, really tough out for me early on. It's just funny how it works. I really struggled against him, but I did well against guys like Jeter and Alex Rodriguez and those guys. So it's like, why? Those guys, Jeter's got Hall of Famer. He's got 3,000 hits. Why did I have success against him? I mean, not to bash Jacoby Ellsbury. He's a phenomenal player, but it's just, can never really explain it, Just get on the mound, and you can tell the guys that see you a little bit better than the other guys.
I used to pitch as a kid, high school, 1 year, semi-pro. There was always some hitters that they just looked like they covered the whole plate and didn't know where to pitch them.
Yeah.
Especially lefties.
Yeah. Lefties are always tough for righty. For me, you can tell the way they take pitches, the way they swing at them, the guys that see real good and the guys that are a little hesitant and don't.
When you started off, you talked about how you played as a kid in passion. Do you still feel that? And we have that same...
Yeah, absolutely. If I didn't have that same passion, I wouldn't be playing. Because you have to have that passion to play at this level. I mean, obviously, there's some great, great perks of being a Major League Baseball player, stay in nice hotels, financially, it's extremely rewarding, but, there's a lot of sacrifices that you make, too. You don't see your family at all. I mean, once the season gets rolling, you're here, you're at the ballpark every day, so you better love doing what you do, because you don't have an option of doing anything else. This is what I've wanted to do my whole life, playing at the highest level when I'm playing a game. Getting paid to do it, I have absolutely no complaints ever. I'm lucky. I hit the lottery to have this opportunity.